All right, let's get to the news this morning, shall we? Let's talk about what's happening on the stimulus front this morning. And some pretty big news on the stimulus front, because we actually have Congress moving forward on this. We have a number of members of Congress who are pushing for a quick vote on that, the original infrastructure bill, so they can get right to this additional bill. I'm actually pretty surprised by that process. But get ready for the summer of Bernie Sanders. You know, we're heading into we're heading full on almost back to school time, but this is the end of the summer. It's like Bernie Sanders end of summer sale right now. He really is out there going to be selling this budget. And he's, so the Senate Budget Committee chairman is Bernie Sanders. He's now going to be traveling right to the heart of Republican held areas. So get ready. He's going to Iowa. He's going to Indiana, where they're not going to have rain for another week. So it's been like nonstop heat. And he's going to be holding town hall meetings there in support of the Democrats' $3.5 trillion reconciliation plan. He's going to be out there selling it. He's going right to the heart of it. And he says Sanders will be in Indiana on August 27th, Iowa on August 29th. And Sanders is specifically going to be targeting districts where the Trump vote grew in 2020. So people were like, wait a second, people were more interested in voting for Trump in 2020 than they were in 2016 in these specific districts. Sick and tired of politicians. I mean, I think it's kind of ballsy to go right to these areas. But I think, like you and I talk about here on the show quite a bit, I think this underscores that these people who he's trying to talk to are just sick and tired of politics altogether. And these are people that can be picked up by these policies that, like, hey, we want to help you. We want to help you. We legitimately want to help you. No, I've heard that before. No, no, for real this time. Like, that's why I'm here today. I'm here holding this town hall so that we can have this dialogue. I mean, these people are available. There's 100 million people that didn't even vote in the last election. So even if they're Trump voters or there are 100 million people that didn't vote, these people are right there waiting for a government to actually support them for once.
Well, and that's the thing. They are. They're going to be very gun shy, like, you know, because they've been lied to so much. But if they do say this, and they do manage to get them on board, and they do what they say, that will go a long way. Because even, you know, Biden hasn't done all he said, you know. So if one politician would do what they say they're going to do, that politician would earn so much trust from so many people.
And he's driving the budget process, right? So, you know, he can really say, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to pass this. We don't need Republicans. They're against it anyway. Republicans don't want to support this. They want to actually, they want to scrap it. They want to undercut it. And an interesting moment happened yesterday on the floor of the Senate. I mean, the back and forth with Senator Rand Paul and Bernie Sanders. Did you see it? It was pretty explosive. So they got into a back and forth yesterday, where Rand Paul basically wants to chop as much as he can out of the budget. So they're like, we don't want to help anyone, right? And then Bernie Sanders is like, you realize how much this is going to hurt the American people at a time when they are absolutely suffering, and we continue to funnel millions of billions of dollars to billionaires and Wall Street. You want to slash this stuff?
Well, it's watch as this. If it's before you get to that, it's as if they don't think that there's still an issue. Like, they still think, they think people are just fine. Like, oh, the pandemic's moving on. Everybody's fine. Everybody's back to work. But do they look out here? Like, that is not the case at all. Things are still completely out of hand.
No, and we see that even with these jobs numbers that we got yesterday, or, you know, we're going to get some more updated ones today. Like, jobs numbers look pretty good, but guess what? Where they're where they are the best, they're in those that are making good money. Like, those are the jobs that have been filled. But the lower income jobs, those areas where people just are just treated like crap, those people are hurting, where they're having to work two and three jobs, where they don't have, they have medical bills. They won't even go to the hospital because they have medical bills, or because they can't afford to pay. So they just as soon not get medications, and they'll stay home and get sick. So watch this back and forth between Rand Paul and Bernie Sanders yesterday on the floor of the Senate.
What I have presented today is an alternative to the Democrat budget. This is a budget that balances in 5 years.
Senator Paul's amendment would slash federal spending by trillions of dollars. It would mean massive cuts to Medicare, to Medicaid, to food stamps.
Am I good? Mr. President, hey, can you guys?
The senator from Kentucky.
I call up my amendment 3150 and ask to be reported by number.
The clerk will report.
Senator from Kentucky, Mr. Paul, proposes an amendment number 3150.
Can we have quiet in the chamber, please?
I'd like to speak. I want to tell you how I'm going to.
Please take your conversations off the floor.
Isn't it ironic that during today's long debate, we have not heard a word of the actual subject at hand, the budget. The budget presented by the Democrats has been entirely ignored by both parties. But if you read it, the Democrat budget before us is a blueprint for bankruptcy. The Democrat budget never balances and spends and borrows $15 trillion over 10 years. Already our national debt exceeds $28 trillion. We borrow $2 million a minute. Now, Republicans have largely been united in believing in a constitutional amendment to balance our budget in 5 years. In fact, many of the members have voted for that. What I have presented today is an alternative to the Democrat budget. This is a budget that balances in 5 years, and I recommend a yes vote.
Senator from Vermont.
Mr. President, Senator Paul's amendment would slash federal spending by trillions of dollars. It would mean massive cuts to Medicare, to Medicaid, to food stamps, to virtually every federal program that impacts working people and low-income people. It would cause massive suffering. I urge a no vote.
How are we so far apart on this? So that's why Bernie Sanders is out there right now going to be arguing that the massive package Democrats are putting together will have huge benefits for the middle class. Americans in those states specifically, he's going to be talking in Iowa and in Indiana. It's hard to say. Sanders, who oversaw the Senate's passage of this multi-trillion-dollar budget resolution, paves the way for reconciliation. He's turned into sort of a one-man PR machine right now going out there. I mean, earlier this month, he wrote op-eds for the Wall Street Journal. He's been on Fox News. They've been putting him out there. I think it's interesting, actually, if you sort of step back and look at the way that the team Biden is sort of handling it. I think they're onto something here. I think they realize, like, wow, this progressive message can be delivered by the best person possible, and that's Bernie Sanders. Maybe we're on to something. Like, he's the best person to sell this. People are supportive of it. Maybe we should actually have more policies that reflect the things that Bernie Sanders ran on as president, but we undercut him because big money Democrats undercut him and didn't want him to become president. He's done all kinds of interviews with media outlets in 14 different states and that have GOP senators in these different states. He was on This Week Politics talking about the budget. So he's been getting this message out there as much as possible.
We create millions of good paying jobs. In my view, this is the most consequential piece of legislation for working families since FDR in the 1930s.
One of the things that you've talked about in specific to the current price tag, $3.5 trillion, you've said that people shouldn't necessarily worry about that on the surface because much of this plan will offset itself. Are you saying that if this budget goes forward, that this is a plan that essentially pays as it goes, it pays for itself?
Well, it is a work in progress, and we've got five different committees working on it. But this is what I do absolutely believe, that at a time when billionaires in a given year pay nothing in federal income taxes, large profitable corporations like Amazon and many others make billions, pay nothing in federal income tax. When you have a situation where the pharmaceutical industry charges us the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs and Medicare does not negotiate prices with them, if you're asking me, do I think we can fund this proposal in a way that does not raise taxes by one nickel for people making $400,000 or less? I absolutely do.
As Linda Evans says, it's always a work in progress. Of course.
Well, I'm just hoping this isn't like some kind of PR campaign to boost the popularity of the Democrats before the midterms, you know?
Well, of course it is, right? I mean,
but only that, you know what I mean? Like, because that's what they do. It'll be all this lip service, and Bernie's going to go out there and he's going to put his neck on the line, and then Biden's going to sell him down the river once they gain the popularity and keep his position, you know?
Well, we'll see. I mean, if it's Biden that sells him down the river, it ends up being people like Kyrsten Sinema, and Joe Manchin, right? So at the end of the day, will those senators end up supporting this reconciliation process where they don't have to use any Democrat or any Republicans to pass this thing? It's going to be interesting to see. But you know, you have these Republicans right now that's saying, you know, we're not going to pass anything. We're not going to work with you on this. Mitch McConnell came out and said, this is just a big, big wet kiss for, you know, liberal programs and socialist programs in the United States. We're going to run up the tab. And it's like, you know, it's, you say that without the least bit of irony in your voice, right? When you can literally, Mitch McConnell, pass trillions of dollars in money going to big businesses, defense contractors, ad nauseum. You can do it. You just look the other way as if, hey, we don't know that we're just lining these people's pockets.
Well, and has his wife paid us back yet? Like, has she paid back the loan that we gave her? Mitch's wife? Yeah. Just out of curiosity.
No, she hasn't. Yeah, we were able to funnel money to their family so they can get PPP loans and do just fine.
Yeah,
and Rand Paul, by the way, can also, you know, he and his wife can put money inside of, you know, buy stocks in companies that are going to be working on COVID vaccines because you know about it. You have insider
information. So not only they don't want to help the American people, like, but he could have invested in his wife. He probably could have given her a loan. He probably has plenty of money. She probably didn't need that loan at all. When there's like over almost 200,000 small businesses went out of business that could have used that money and they didn't even need it and they got it.
Right.
It just shows you the level these people are on. It's that's unbelievable.
Bernie Sanders taking on Mitch McConnell. Watch this week. This happened.
Now, I understand that Senator McConnell, the Republican leader, and others are really shocked by this bill. They cannot believe it. Imagine, just imagine, that the United States Senate is addressing the needs of working families and is going to stand up for ordinary Americans rather than just the wealthy and powerful. What is this world coming to? Don't we understand that here in the Senate, we're supposed to take campaign contributions from the drug companies and the insurance companies and the fossil fuel industry and from the 1% and do their bidding? Isn't that the way it has always been done here in the U.S. Senate? Well, Senator McConnell, things are changing. For once in a very long time, the United States Congress is going to stand with working families and not just the rich and the powerful.
I sure hope so.
I would hope so. But I hear, you know, look, they do not need Republicans to pass this. You know, they do not need Republicans to pass this. They need 50 votes. Kamala Harris will be the tie-breaking vote. That's the way that this will unfold. But what they do need is Kyrsten Sinema, and they need Joe Manchin on board. There's been moves overnight about these guys are basically consulting with the other moderate Democrats right now to see where they come down on this. So they're trying to get Nancy Pelosi to bring to the floor this vote on the first round of infrastructure, get that thing moved quickly. And as leverage, then they say they will be on board for the reconciliation moving that forward as quickly as possible. I think they're moving so quickly on this first bill because they just don't want us to see what's inside of it. You know, they really don't want us to see how much money got funneled to big businesses and what sort of secret sauce is in this thing. That's probably the only reason they're moving so quickly, don't you think? I do.
Yeah, I would agree.
And that is why, Madam President, as Chairman of the Senate Budget Committee, I am proud to introduce a $3.5 trillion budget resolution that we will soon be considering, I expect tomorrow. This is a budget resolution that will allow the Senate to move forward on a reconciliation bill that, in my view, will be the most consequential and comprehensive piece of legislation for working people, for the elderly, for the children, for the sick, and for the poor that this body has addressed since Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the New Deal, and the 1930s. I wish that I could tell you that my Republican colleagues understand the crises facing working families, and that they understand the moral imperative of us having to address climate change, and that we are working together to do, in fact, what the American people want, create millions of good-paying jobs, addressing the needs of working families and climate change. I wish I could tell you that, but I can't. As we go forward, in all likelihood, we will not get one Republican vote. We're going to have to do it on our own with 50 Democratic votes here in the Senate, plus the Vice President of the United States. Now, some of my Republican friends will say, well, that's such a bad idea. Why aren't you more bipartisan in terms of reconciliation? Well, I would remind my Republican colleagues that they didn't have a problem with reconciliation when they gave almost $2 trillion in tax breaks to the very richest people in this country and the largest corporations. No problem doing that. They didn't have a problem with reconciliation when they tried to throw 30 million people off of the health care they had by abolishing the Affordable Care Act. So that's where we are. We are facing a crisis facing working families. We need to create millions of good-paying jobs. We need to tackle the existential threat of climate change. We need to expand health care and Medicare so that elderly people have dental care, eyeglasses, and hearing aids. We need to lower the cost of prescription drugs and have Medicare negotiate prices with the pharmaceutical industry. We need to make sure that we get doctors and nurses and dentists into underserved areas. So, Madam President, tomorrow begins one of the very important debates that we have ever had. And the question is not complicated. Do we have the courage to stand up to powerful special interest and tell the corporate world and the 1%, yeah, you are finally going to have to pay your fair share of taxes so that we can create millions of good-paying jobs for working families, so we can protect our children, protect the elderly, and address the threat of climate change? That is the issue, and I have absolute confidence that we will, in fact, rise to the occasion and do what the American people want, and that we will pass the budget resolution tomorrow.
So, all eyes, baby, on the Senate. Shirley Durnell, thank you for your super chat. Says, thank you, Bernie. Stay strong. Don't back down. Tax the wealthy and the drug corporations. You know, he's been out there pushing expanding Medicare to include coverage of vision, dental, hearing programs as part of the reconciliation process, as well as allowing Medicare to negotiate on these prescription drug prices. And his message on growing income inequality in the U.S. has become an issue both parties talk about frequently. So Sanders' longtime opposition to trade deals, which he says often favor corporate America at the expense of workers, sounds a lot like what became the GOP mantra under former President Donald Trump, doesn't it? Right? So he's going to go into Indiana, where you have these plants that went to Mexico and other places, and he's going to say, enough is enough. Enough of these corporate interests. Here's what we've got to do to help the American people. And we're going to make sure that you have access to quality drugs, Medicare, and lower prescription drugs.
Well, and I'm from that area. I'm from Indiana, and there was so much like Caterpillar construction equipment stuff. Like, there's so many corporations that were there. In order just to increase their profits slightly, they moved their production to other countries. Like, just for profit. Like, you had towns that depended on all of that industry, and they just moved it out for profit.
Well, remember Carrier? You're in Indiana. Remember the Carrier air conditioning company?
Yeah.
Remember at the beginning of the Trump presidency, he basically went there and kind of asked them to not move to Mexico. And they said, okay, we won't. And then they ended up moving like halfway through his presidency. They're like, well, you know what? We just got to get out of here. And so then those people left, you know? And he was like, Trump was like, I'm so disappointed in them. I think the same thing happened with the Harley Davidson factory. I mean, you know, the list goes on. When you can get incredibly cheap labor in other places without regulation, and these companies, these corporate monopolies, they can do whatever they want, walk all over people, make people work 16-hour shifts and not pay them. I mean, that's the reality, unfortunately. We've got more news to get to here, but first, I want to tell you about our friends over at Policy Genius. Today's show is brought to you by Policy Genius. Well, summer's almost over, and that means responsibility is about to take over once again, right? No more just lounging by the beach. We've got back to school. We've got to start taking care of stuff. And the reality is, you need to get your life insurance done now. With Policy Genius, you can get free quotes in minutes. I've been a huge fan of Policy Genius for years because of how easy it is to compare all in one place. I saw the effects, by the way, of not having good life insurance when my father passed away just last year. And my mom was left struggling to pick up the pieces. If only he had prepared with the proper life insurance with my mom, then she wouldn't have had to deal with this after he passed away. And so if someone relies on your financial support, whether it's a child, an aging parent, or even a business partner, you need life insurance. And Policy Genius makes it easy to compare quotes from over a dozen top insurers all in one place. And you could save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. It's so easy to get started today. First, just head over to policygenius.com/morninginvest, and in minutes, you can work out how much life insurance coverage you need. And you can compare personalized quotes to find your best price. And when you're ready to apply, the Policy Genius team will handle all of the paperwork and scheduling for free. Policy Genius never sells your information to other companies as well, and they don't add on extra fees that you don't know are there. That's the kind of services that earned Policy Genius thousands of five-star reviews across Trustpilot and Google. So head on over to policygenius.com/morninginvest to get started right now. All right, next on the show, let's talk about this booster bonanza. So if you watched President Biden yesterday, President Biden came out and was talking about these new booster shots, held a press conference to talk about all of this. And there's some pushback this morning from scientists and health experts on whether or not this was premature. So first, let's play what President Biden had to say yesterday about these booster shots as we head into the fall that will be available come September. This is, I guess, going to be the new normal, folks.
To get more people vaccinated. Next, I want to speak to you all of you who are vaccinated. How should you be thinking about the moment we're in? First, know that you're highly protected against severe illness and death from COVID-19. Only a small fraction of people going to the hospital today are those who have been vaccinated. But we have a responsibility to give the maximum amount of protection, all of you the maximum amount. Earlier today, our medical experts announced a plan for booster shots to every fully vaccinated American, adult American. You know, this will boost your immune response. It will increase your protection from COVID-19. And it's the best way to protect ourselves from new variants that could arise. The plan is for every adult to get a booster shot 8 months after you got your second shot. Pending approval from the Food and Drug Administration, the CDC's committee of outside experts will be ready to start this booster program during the week of September 20.
Does that mean a booster every 8 months after that then? Like, is this an every 8 month thing? Because the pharmaceutical industry is probably just dancing in their offices right now of all the trillions they're going to make.
I'm just watching the stock prices of Moderna and Pfizer. We're still waiting on the J&J because J&J was not a part of this. They're saying they're waiting on data on that. But there's some pushback this morning on this. I mean, you know that these stock prices are going to take off. I mean, all I need to do, let me see if I can find it here. I'm going to go to Moderna stock this hour. It's pre-market, right? So we'll see as this thing spikes based on these boosters. But it's already gone up. It's already gone up overnight in pre-market. It's at $398 a share right now. So we'll see. We'll check in to see where Moderna's stock goes later this afternoon on this booster news. And it certainly spiked last night. It certainly spiked last night after this news. Of course, and they've been pushing the Food and Drug Administration to try to get this stuff through. But there's something bigger at play here. And I'm not, you know, getting into politics here. What I'm saying is that there are a number of health experts who've come out now and said, wait a second, this might be too fast. This might be too fast because endorsing boosters before the FDA changes the EUA or grants full approval is actually endorsing something that's not currently permissible under law, said Holly Fernandez Lynch, a University of Pennsylvania bioethicist. any use beyond the specific terms of the emergency use authorization would be unauthorized, she says. So it would be very strange for the Biden administration to be the one calling the shots on boosters, according to Dorit Reese, a professor who studies vaccine policy at the University of California. She says, this is not something that's generally done by the administration or by political actors. If they're going to circumvent the process, I'm very concerned by this. Donald Trump's efforts to push the FDA quickly to approve vaccines. Remember, there was all this pushback on, like, Trump, leave them alone. Like, let the FDA do its job, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that criticism?
Mm-hmm.
So are we not equal opportunity offenders here on this show? We always are, right?
Well, no, that was the biggest fear all along, is that as soon as Biden got in, everybody was going to go to sleep because it's Grandpa Biden. He's a good guy. Everything's going to be perfect.
The CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, which includes medical and public health experts, will meet on August 24th. The FDA is also working with the CDC and the National Institutes of Health to consider when boosters might be given, according to an FDA spokeswoman. But the reason that, I mean, scientists and experts are of the opinion the Biden administration is rushing ahead without enough data and enough regulatory oversight. You know, to boost a vaccine so early isn't science-based, Ann Durbin says. She's a vaccine researcher, says, I think there's this tidal wave building that's based on anxiety. And I don't think it's based on scientific evidence that a booster is even needed. I would have preferred that this has been vetted a little bit more. A vaccine expert from the Children's Hospital of Pennsylvania, who's an expert and advises the FDA on vaccines. This just seems to be a declaration without the kind of vetting you would like to have seen.
Well, and this is just it's that fear that sells it to people. This is why they're able to mandate in New York, you know, with that. What's that? That fun card or whatever they're doing where it's mandated now. You have to have a vaccine to get into restaurants and you have to show your ID and a vax card.
Right.
That's what gets people on board with this stuff, is the fear.
While booster shots in the United States are expected to start the week of September 20th, the FDA has not even ruled yet on Pfizer's application for approval of a third shot. Moderna hasn't yet asked the agency to authorize a third shot at all. Jesse Goodman, a former chief scientist at the FDA, was also concerned about the administration's decision to announce the plan before the review process is played out. Quote, in the heat of the moment and when we're all dealing with a real public health emergency, it becomes almost doubly important that we continually reassess and have the normal process in place. And I do worry that we put the cart before the horse, said Goodman. You know, a former Biden advisor, Michael Osterholm, you remember him. We've played clips of Michael Osterholm here on the show. He says there isn't enough convincing data to suggest that everyone needs it. So we're basically going to say to people, look, I don't want to put words in people's mouths, but you want to look at ulterior motives here. These big drug companies have made bank, right? And so without even having these things approved, and we know that the head of Pfizer, we know that they're pushing for these, right? They've been pushing, trying to fast track these booster shots.
Well, and that's what it is. It's the first to patent. The first ones to get to the patent, they make the most money. And that's why they didn't want to look at alternative things like ivermectin or anything like that. That's why there was such a push to hide all that stuff, because that stuff doesn't make them money. So they hid what the other things that could potentially be working, and didn't even, you know, maybe there's an argument that ivermectin wouldn't have worked, but to just completely squash the conversation in a time when you've got people dying should show you that that's not what it was about. If it would have been about that, the NIH and all these people would have done more investigating into that, and there would be more things around that, because that's a generic drug.
They're never going to do it because there's no money behind generic drugs. They're not going to support a study. Who's going to fund this? Because you can't make money off of it.
Right, and that alone should show you what the motivation was for these.
You know, why wasn't Bill Gates, like, Bill Gates supposed to care about everyone, right? So he's the one who funnels billions of dollars, right, for all this different vaccine research. Like, if we found out that, like, ivermectin was an opportunity for success, right, it's a generic drug, maybe you could have funded that. No, instead, yeah, Let's back the horses where we can make billions of dollars in profit.
Exactly.
ZZL in our chat says, Big Pharma laughing all the way to the bank. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what's happening. And I wouldn't be surprised if we even get censored for even talking about like the that all of these scientists are coming forward saying, whoa, 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 whoa. The White House was way too fast on this booster program. Like, what is going on here? We don't even have approval on the actual vaccines, and we don't know the long-term efficacy of it. But what now you're actually creating more vaccine hesitancy, right? Because by doing this, what you're saying is that the current vaccines are just not strong enough. And we know that to be the case. We know that there are from the data and the scientists that have been reporting on this, they said that these are like at the bare minimum vaccines. They'll keep you out of the ICU. They'll keep you alive. You might get symptoms, but it'll keep you alive, right? These are like they haven't been tested for so long. They are the bare minimum, Pfizer, Moderna. They do not want the negative public press by having massive side effects, right? That are reported anyway, right? So what you're saying, I think, is creates even more vaccine hesitancy. It's like the CDC mixed message on masks a few weeks ago. But also the CDC had come out and said, we don't think anyone needs a booster. That was just a few weeks ago. So the CDC doesn't, I mean, they don't know their ass from a hole in the ground at this point, as my dad used to say.
Well, and they and on the media, if you watch the media, they have framed this that it's Trump supporters and Republicans that don't want to get the vaccine. But it's not. It's people with PhDs, other scientists and doctors that are saying, you know, be cautious and talk to your doctor. Don't just go out and get the vaccine because they're telling you to. Like, they're not telling you any of the side effects or anything when you go in to get it. They're not divulging all the information that is out there. They're hiding the negative and only telling you the positive just to get as many of these. We got to get the shots in the arms of as many people as possible. But they're not letting you know all the information. So this is not a Trump supporter, you know, anti-vaxxer thing. These are legitimate concerns. I'm not an anti-vaxxer, and I'm not getting it until there's more information that tells me that it's you know, there's no, I'm not taking the chance on the side effects. And they're not telling people about it. When Jennifer went to get hers, they didn't mention any single side effect at all that was potential. She still had to sign something, but they don't tell you all that stuff.
Well, and it's emergency use authorization, right? So these haven't been approved yet by the FDA. So
right.
That's why I spent the beginning part of this segment mentioning all of the scientists and doctors, former Biden advisors, who are saying, I don't think that this was a smart move. Like, we should wait on this. We should absolutely wait on this, that there's no convincing data that everyone even needs this. Like, show us the data. What are you basing this on, President Biden? Like, what are you basing this on? Show us the data. Show your former advisors and scientists what the data is that we need to now go get a booster shot on top of this. It's going to somehow boost our immunity. He says that. He just said that. It's going to boost your immunity.
Well, and hopefully he's not listening to the CDC, because I've seen some people talking about this from the very beginning, and their videos were taken down. The CDC said one thing. They said another. Their video got taken down. Then their videos come to find out they were right and the CDC was wrong. You have people that are out here in the medical field practicing medicine, seeing what is going on, and they're saying to be careful. We're not listening to those people. Those people are pushed aside, marginalized, and their videos taken down. And we're just getting this CDC, WHO, establishment information, and the mainstream media pushing this. You're not getting any of the real information that's coming from the people that are out here working in the fields. And that's dangerous.
Very dangerous. That's why, instead of relying on this data, you know, I got on the phone last week and called, I mean, hospital after hospital after hospital, and talked to their ICU, their, you know, intensive care units. And I wanted to see, you know, we're hearing that all of these beds are overrun. Is that the case? Are they with unvaccinated people? Is that the case? So I went and I asked them, and I got the answer, and the answer was yes. So that was true. Okay. And so then when we hear President Biden come out in a primetime address, like, we're all supposed to sit there like drones and not question it. And you have a whole group of scientists now coming out saying, whoa, 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 wait a second. This is premature. This is totally premature.
In which time anyone vaccinated on or before January 20 will be eligible to get a booster shot. So that means that if you got your second shot on February 15th, you're eligible to get your booster shot on October 15th. If you got your second shot on March 15th, go for your booster starting November 15th. And so on. Just remember, as a simple rule, 8 months after your second shot, get a booster shot. These booster shots are free. We'd be able to get the booster shots at any one of approximately 80,000 vaccination locations nationwide. It will be easy. Just show your vaccination card and you'll get a booster.
Brandy Kenny in our chat says, you know, some of us can't go to a doctor, can't afford it.
Yeah.
So we have to rely on what we hear from the media. And well, they can't be trusted to tell the truth. So how do we know who to listen to about vaccines, COVID information?
Listen to the doctors that are out there actually in the field doing the work, because they're seeing, they have the numbers. And the thing is, like, we're talking about a pharmaceutical industry that is one of the most corrupt industries in the world, like out there. And we don't think that they would do some kind of planned obsolescence. Like, you know, we could just put these really light doses in here. Like, we could cure this disease, but then people aren't going to have to get boosters. We don't have the residuals. It's like, why do they want to get people on residual drugs? You know, why do they want to get people on, you know, we had ADD, then you got adult onset ADD, so they can get these people on, you know, monthly prescriptions. It just feels like they're pushing for money, because they probably do have a way to.
I've seen a number, you're absolutely right. I've seen a number of news stories in the past few days, all sort of saying the same thing. I saw a BBC News article, and I saw a couple of other big stories saying, you know what, this is going to, we should start treating COVID like the flu. People are going to die from COVID. We need to start treating it like the flu that it is. And this is here to stay. Like, this is now the mainstream media's version of this. It's here to stay. So what does that mean? That means every year you got to go get your COVID shot, right? You're going to have to go get your COVID booster every year, just like you go and get the flu shot, which is only effective for like a certain strain or the most popular strains of the flu, right? From last year's flu. So you're getting a shot from last year's flu, right? So well, protect yourself. You got to protect yourself if you're elderly, right? Got to go out there and get your COVID shot every year now. Thanks, pharmaceutical industry. This is what you're telling us, basically.
Well, and if you look at the data that's coming from Israel, the majority of people that you're seeing now on ventilators and dying were vaccinated 6 months ago. So everybody that's been saying, hey, get out there and get vaccinated. And we just saw somebody here in chat that said 50% of the people in the hospital her sister works in are vaccinated people on ventilators. So if that's true, then, you know, that information isn't being told. Like, we're not hearing that. So if that's the case, we were told to go get vaccinated, and you'd be able to live life as normal, but that doesn't seem to be the case, nor was the case all along.
You know, you were on vacation, you were away, but apparently there was some misinformation on this. And so I want to make sure that we're on the same page with this Israeli stuff here, so we're not spreading this. But and I reached out to sources in Israel on this question, and apparently it's been debunked that the people that are in the hospital in and if there's some new information about Israel, but I want to be fair, just right here on the show. And I wish I could put this up on the screen. Yeah. Can't.
I'll send you a link to what I had that showed that.
But this is the Associated Press. This claim, the newest Israeli data on COVID-19 infections indicate a complete vaccine failure on every entry level. The data from Israel shows that nearly all serious cases and deaths are among the vaccinated. And apparently that's not true. The claim ignores the fact that Israel has only a fraction of COVID cases that it had in January before vaccines were widespread. And so the very few people that have been in the hospital, according to my sources in Israel, there's been like three people. And it was like 85 years old who died, who had been vaccinated, and then got like a Delta variant. And apparently, and according to my sources in Israel, they're saying like all talk is about the Delta variant right now, and they're ramping up to get the booster shot. So again, they're dealing with the same stuff we're dealing with. I think this I want to be clear. That's the information I have as the latest, is that has been debunked, and those numbers were floating around media, and they've now been debunked. So,
well, I'll send you the link to the thing that shows the charts where it shows last year's numbers and this year's numbers and puts them up against each other and shows that it is somewhat accurate.
Yeah. Send it to me. So, this is what, you know, they're now saying it's been, but anyway, well, we'll get to the bottom of it. But anyway, not to go off on a tangent, but I just want to say that, I talked about that on the show one day last week when you were out with your tongue injury, which, by the way, if you didn't know, David actually bit his tongue, not metaphorically, but bit his tongue, and Anyway, but we want to get to the bottom of it. Like, I'm not afraid, you know, that's the thing here on this show, like non-mainstream media, we are not bought and sold by billionaire corporations. So if you're watching us for the first time, thank you. Thank you for subscribing. You're going to get the real news here. We're not going to spout billionaire propaganda from these pharmaceutical companies and from mainstream media that are just an arm. I mean, all you need to do right now is turn on TV and see what's happening on Afghanistan, right? How? We should never have left Afghanistan. We should stay there for many more years. How? No one saw this coming, this disaster. No one saw this coming, right? We couldn't figure this out. Even General Milley, who came out, said, we didn't plan for this. We didn't see this coming. We just didn't anticipate it. We didn't know about it. Really? You couldn't figure this out? This was not obvious to everyone who is paying attention, who's not bought and sold by the mainstream media and these billionaire defense contractors? The whole reason that the Afghanistan war was a total success. It did exactly what it was supposed to do, right? What was it supposed to do? Let me ask you guys in the chat. What did the war in Afghanistan, what was the success of the war in Afghanistan? Anybody know?
Well, what was our objective? Does anybody know? Like, our objective was to go in, get bin Laden, right? And get out.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it. So if that part of it was a success, right? But what underneath the hood was a success? The whole purpose of the Afghanistan war was to funnel trillions of dollars to the military-industrial complex, wasn't it? That was their whole plan all along. That was absolutely their plan under George W. Bush along.
Did you see the video from Julian Assange yesterday?
Oh, no, I missed it. I saw it. What did he say?
So this was a video from back in, I can't remember when this video was. It was when we initially were going into, I think we'd been there already. He said, we're going to be there for 10 years. He said, all Afghanistan is a way to take money from the American people, from the taxpayers, funnel it to Afghanistan, and funnel it back to the military industrial complex and their goons.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So Ron Paul, not Rand Paul, Ron Paul, okay, his father, whom I have a lot of respect for, he's been a guest here on the show. I've interviewed him multiple times, former presidential candidate. He was also a senator. He's been one of the few politicians who has always told the truth, and he's been one of the few politicians who's been staunchly anti-war from the moment he came into office to the moment he left. And he's always warned us against the military-industrial complex. I don't agree with everything that he says, but I absolutely stand lock stock in two smoking guns. What is it? I stand lock stock in two
smoking barrels.
Yeah, with him on this issue, which is the military-industrial complex. So here is Ron Paul in a video that's now gone viral over the past few days from exactly 10 years ago. Okay, 10 years ago. And I remember this video at the time. I remember when he gave this speech at the time. He was slammed for it, by the way. Okay, 10 years ago, on the floor of the Senate, giving this speech about Afghanistan and how I guess no one could see it coming, but he could absolutely see it coming. Pretty amazing that here he was 10 years ago and nails it. Watch this.
I thank the gentleman, and Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to revise and extend my remarks.
Without objection, gentleman's recognized.
The question we're facing today is, should we leave Afghanistan? I think the answer is very clear, and it's not complicated. And of course, we should, as soon as we can. This suggests that we can leave by the end of the year. If we don't, we'll be there for another decade, would be my prediction. The American people are now with us. A group of us here in the Congress, bipartisan group, for nearly a decade have been talking about this, arguing not to expand the war, not to be over there, not to be in nation building, and the American people didn't pay much attention. Now they are. The large majority of the American people now say it's time to get out of Afghanistan. It's a fruitless venture. Too much has been lost. The chance of winning, since we don't even know what we're going to win, doesn't exist. So they are tired of it. Financially, there's a good reason to come home as well. Some argue we have to be there because if we leave under these circumstances, we'll lose face. It will look embarrassing to leave. So how many more men and women have to die? How many more dollars have to be spent to save face? That is one of the worst arguments possible.
That's just like Vietnam, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? We can't go through this embarrassment. So we'll just continue this. I mean, well after we know that we're losing, well after we know that it's unwinnable, we're just going to continue so we save face.
We're not there under legal conditions. This is a war. Who says it isn't a war? Everybody talks about the Afghan war. Was the war declared? Of course not. It wasn't declared. There was a resolution passed that said that the president at that time, under the emergency of 9/11, could go and deal with al-Qaeda, those who dealt and brought upon the 9/11 bombings. But al-Qaeda is not there anymore. So we're fighting the Taliban. The Taliban used to be our allies at one time when the Soviets were there.
Yeah, we funded them. We armed them, right? The weapons that the Taliban had, we provided to them.
Well, and can we also just note that it was al-Qaeda that were the terrorists? The Taliban is not even a terrorist organization. Like, we've actually worked with them. Like, we're, you know, so they're not even labeled a terrorist organization.
Right, we went after al-Qaeda, which was being harbored inside of Afghanistan. Like, that's where they were. We rooted them out. We got rid of them, right? We killed Osama bin Laden.
Taliban wants, their main goal is to keep foreign occupationers out. They want foreigners out of their country. They're not al-Qaeda. Yet most Americans, maybe less so now, but the arguments here on the floor is we got to go after al-Qaeda. This is not a war against al-Qaeda. If anything, it gives the incentive for al-Qaeda to grow in numbers rather than dealing with them. You know, the money issue, we're talking about a lot of money. Huh? How much do we spend in a year? Probably about $130 billion, up to $1 trillion now in this past decade. Later on in the day, we're going to have two votes. We're going to have a vote on doing something sensible, making sense out of our foreign policy, bringing our troops home, and saving hundreds of billions of dollars. And then we also will have a vote against NPR to cut the funding of NPR. There is a serious question about whether that will even cut one penny, but at least the fiscal conservatives are going to be overwhelmingly in support of slashing NPR, go home and brag about how they're so great fiscal conservatives, and the very most they might save is $10 million. And that's their claim to fame for slashing the budget. At the same time, they won't consider for a minute cutting a real significant amount of money. All empires end for fiscal reasons because they spread themselves too far around the world, and that's what we're facing. We're in the midst of a military conflict that's contributing to this inevitable crisis, and it's financial. And you'd think there'd be a message in the fact of how did the Soviets come down? By doing the very same thing that we're doing, perpetual occupation of a country. We don't need to be occupying Afghanistan or any other country. We don't even need to be considered going into Libya and where else. Fortunately, I guess for those of us who would like to see less of this killing, we will have to quit because we won't be able to afford it. The process that we're going through is following the War Powers Resolution. This is a proper procedure. It's call attention to how we slip into these wars. I have always claimed that it's the way we get into the wars that are the problem. If we would be precise and only go to war with a declaration of war, get with the people behind us, knowing who the enemy is, and fight, win, and get it over with, that would be more legitimate. They don't do it now because the American people wouldn't support it. Nobody's going to declare war against Afghanistan or Iraq or Libya. So we now have been so careless for the past 50 or 60 years that we have, as a Congress and especially a House, we have reneged on our responsibilities. We have avoided our prerogatives of saying that we have the control. We have the control of the purse. We have control of when we're supposed to go to war. And yet the wars continue. They never stop. And yet we are going to be completely brought down to our knees.
Completely brought down to our knees. You know, he talks about empires crumbling and the reason that they crumble. All you need to do is read Jared Diamond's excellent book, Collapse, to look at how empires fall. And what he's talking about is they end up spreading themselves too thin. You know, $28 trillion in debt. We have 900 military bases around the world.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize, like, the Roman Empire, They were the strongest army, and they had impenetrable forces, yeah. Right? They had the shield right. thing. Like, they won every, like, they expanded so far. And how did they collapse? Financially. They ran mm-hmm. out of money and then just completely collapsed. Whole empire yep. gone. And that's gone. What's happening to us.
Absolutely. So we don't think that history repeats itself? I mean, it absolutely does. No fiat currency in world history has survived, ever. They've all collapsed. But Ron Paul nailing it, hitting the nail on the head 10 years ago. And he says, if we don't get out now, how much longer will we be there? Another decade. And he hit the nail right on the head. Absolutely disgusting. So no one could have predicted it. No one could have predicted how this was going to end. Of course you could have. You absolutely could have. I want to get to this pesticide story. This really chaps my ass, this story. We wrote about it in today's newsletter, by the way. I hope you read our newsletter. We publish our newsletter every day, Monday through Friday, and it's free and it's informative, and you can read it over your cup of coffee first thing in the morning, and I think you'll be more informed throughout the day. So you'll know a few things, and it only takes you 5 or 10 minutes to read it. Morninginvest.com is how you read our newsletter every day. I want to talk about this toxic pesticide story. A toxic pesticide, well known for years, to alter children's brain chemistry, to literally alter children's brains, is finally being banned from use in the United States. Finally. Like, Europe already banned it years ago. What took so long is the question. So it's lobbying. An incestus.
Monsanto.
Lobbying money that's made, of course, right? It's all politics and money. The only reason, follow the money.
It does what it does to bees.
Right. The insecticide in question is called pyrifos. That's impossible to say. I'm not even going to try to say it. Anyway, it's awful. And it's used throughout agriculture on crops, including soybeans, almond trees, grapes, broccoli, cauliflower. Chances are, by the way, you've probably had some of this in your system at some point. Because guess what? It's been in use in the United States since the 1960s. And it's been last year, 2017, just in 2017 alone, okay? It was 5 million pounds of it were used on U.S. farmland in 2017. So now get this. The Environmental Protection Agency proposed back in 2015 to end the use of this stuff. But guess what? The Trump administration dropped the plan. Why? Why did they drop the plan? What do you think?
Profits? Lobbyists? Profits.
Lobbyists, exactly. So the Environmental Protection Agency, you know, you'd like to think that it's not a political organization, right? So the EPA under the Trump administration just drops the plan. Under pressure from Dow Chemical, the maker of this awful insecticide that alters the brain chemistry of children. So a judge back in April said, uh-uh. And this was brought before this judge said, rather than ban the pesticide or reduce the tolerances to levels that the EPA were fined reasonably certain to cause no harm, the Environmental Protection Agency instead sought to evade through delay tactics. It's plain statutory duty, said Jed Rockoff, a judge in the Ninth Circuit's 67-page ruling back in April. So he basically said, you're not doing your job. You knew that this thing was bad, and you continued through delay tactics to allow this thing to go on. So that, you know, Dow Chemicals calls up the Trump administration, be like, hey, you got this thing right now that's kind of flowing through your Environmental Protection Agency. You're really going to hurt my company. It's really going to hurt my company. So I want you to squash this thing, okay? Go ahead and squash this thing. The new EPA regulation. So now they're going to ban it, okay? And Dow has stopped producing it now. So I think they saw the writing on the wall. But, you know, now I guess because they're not making it, now we can move forward with this. But it's still in use. The new EPA regulation, once formally published, so we still have to publish it for it to actually become law. Then it sets a 6-month deadline for agriculture companies to stop using this horrible insecticide. So to be clear, this ban isn't even finalized yet. Okay. And companies have 6 more months to spray brain-altering chemicals on as much food as they want for another 6 months. You know, I got news for you. Can't like the Food and Drug Administration or other companies immediately say we think that there's salmonella in this, you know, in this whatever, or there's botulism in this thing, so we're going to recall it. We immediately want you to stop using this stuff. So we have the data on the fact that it alters children's brains in the United States. Cancer-causing agent. And we're going to allow them another 6 months to do this? We're going to give you 6 months to stop using it.
That happens so much. It's like sodium benzoate, for instance. That's a preservative that we put in a lot of stuff in this country. It's illegal in Europe to use as a preservative. Like, you won't find it in anything. It's only over here. And the reason they do that is all for profits. I mean, they, like, think about the drugs that go out that are killing people. And it's like, well, you know, I think it's about time we address this and pull this off the market after it's already killed a bunch of people. You know, it's all profits. That's 100% what this is about.
Yeah, let's just wait, right? Let's just wait until this is off the market. Like, we'll deal with it later. So we'll slowly roll this back. Oh, you mean it's killing children? Okay, we'll give you another 6 months to go ahead and continue to still spray this on almonds. And how do you know, like, what company's almonds, you know, unless I guess you're getting organic, right? Unless you're getting organic soybeans, unless you're getting organic almonds, et cetera. Like, how do you know? How do you know? Unless that these chemicals, that's the only way you would have probably find out, you know, is if you're eating organic, that's the only way you'd know that at least you're safe from this stuff. But these companies continue. And I just find it unbelievable. I mean, this is another call to make sure that these organizations, you know, we talk about the EPA, we talk about the CDC, like, you know, these should not be political entities inside the United States government. These things should absolutely be separated. And for the right of Americans, that if there is an issue and we know that this is, we see the data, we're seeing that these children's brains are being affected, pull it off, like, immediately, full stop. You will go to prison if you use this stuff. No more. You are banned from using this stuff. And by the way, I'm just curious, who inspects them? You know, like we hear that these things get banned. But do all of these companies, like, full stop, just stop using it? I mean, are there enough, like, Food and Drug Administrators, inspectors that go out and check and make sure, like, that they're not using these chemicals? How do they know? How do we know that they're still not using them? And we just don't see it.
They're just like, let's take that off the label.
We'll just hide it. Oh, yeah. And by the way, that's the thing, right? I know you know this story, but it's like, well, I think we know that when a lot of these inspectors, they give them like a week or two heads up when they're coming to visit. Right? So we're coming in a few weeks. You better make sure you don't have these chemicals out. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I'm reading a book right now by Mark Kurlansky on cod. You know, he wrote a book called Salt. I like these sort of monocrop histiographies. And so this book on cod, the fish that changed the world, is really fascinating. And he looks at, like, we almost got, like, there was a cod wars, you know, a really fascinating book. But he talks about how, like, the British, they, when the Coast Guard was on patrol looking to see if they were using these, you know, these trawlers and these particular nets and all of this stuff, going after the cod and overfishing, right? Because they were saying everything's being decimated with these nonstop trawling and pulling up all these fish. You're killing the fish. You're killing everything. Like, you're not, you know, it's just destroying the fishing. So the Coast Guard would go out and check on these fishing boats. And so the fishing companies had their own messages over the radio, and they would do these, like, coded messages. And the fishing companies, like Gorton's and all of these big fishing companies, were like, Grandma, literally, this was one of them, Grandma is not feeling well today. She is going to need to lay down. Like, that was like a coded message they would broadcast, which meant that, the Coast Guard's coming. Like, you better hide those nets. So they all know. They know when they're coming. You know, these inspectors show up. They give them a heads up when they're coming, when they're going to show up. That's, I don't know. Although Zazie says they don't know. They don't know?
I mean,
I'd be curious.
Think about back in the day, like, when the mobsters would go in and demand money You know, and you paid the mobsters money and they would protect you or whatever and keep you from, you know, so it's like, it's kind of the same thing. These people are waxing the palms of these industries and they'll be like, we'll warn you before we come. Don't worry. You'll have plenty of time to make it look like you're not doing anything nefarious.
Yeah. So we'll mark you down. It'll be all good. We'll be all good. You can continue to lobby and do what you do. Anyway, you can read more about that story we had in today's newsletter. Check that out. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Really, really, really troubling. We'll see you, everyone. Peace out.